This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. A lobbyist is someone hired by a business or a cause to persuade legislators to support that business or cause. But in Austin and Washington, D.C., working to influence a lawmaker to pass or block a certain law doesn't exactly make you a lobbyist if you say you aren't one. In our state and national capitals, no one wants the job title of lobbyist anymore, but the same work goes on. Are these unlobbyists skirting the law? Are they thumbing their noses in the effort to control out of control influence of our lawmakers? Well, what do you think? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 614-8980. You can also email us your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org. We're joined this half hour talking about unlobbyists by Craig McDonald. He's here with he's the executive director of Texans for Public Justice, and Vivica Novak. She's the editorial and communications director at the Center for Responsive Politics. Welcome to The Source.
Good to be here.
It's good to be with you.
Vivica, so we have people in Austin, in Washington, D.C. They were lobbyists, and then they somehow declared themselves not to be lobbyists. They deactivated themselves as lobbyists. So what does that mean? What changed?
Well, what changed is a good question. I mean, what formally changed is that they went from 1 year reporting clients and filing quarterly lobbying reports, and then the next year they seem to not have any clients or file lobbying reports from 2012 to 2013. So the question is why, and there are several possible reasons. This has been going on for a few years, by the way, this decline. And one of the reasons that people postulate sometimes is that, you know, it's been kind of a do-nothing Congress, a Congress that really isn't considering very much legislation, or to the extent that legislation is pending, there's no hope that it's going to get passed or no chance that it's going to get passed. So not as much reason for lobbyists to be up there. And another, you know, another reason may well be that the Obama administration has kind of made lobbying a dirty word, saying that if you've lobbied in the last 2 years, you can't work in our administration, which, you know, there are waivers granted, and there have been a number I saw today was about 100 former lobbyists who are working in the administration. But it's still the exception, and there is this general attitude in the administration that being a lobbyist is not looked kindly upon. So some lobbyists who may have registered and filed reports in an abundance of caution, in other words, they weren't sure if they really met the reporting threshold or not, which is an amount of time spent lobbying or an amount of money being paid for lobbying, maybe are, you know, just not doing the registration thing anymore because they don't want to be viewed with that scarlet L.
So how big of a fall off are we talking about? I mean, what's the reduction?
Well, it's not huge. It's more of a gentle slide than a big drop-off. The number of active lobbyists went from 12,433 in 2012 to 12,279 in 2013. So, you know, that's not enormous. And the amount of money that was spent on lobbying went from $3.31 billion to $3.21 billion. Again, it's not huge, but it's been on a steady decline since 2010.
And the suspicion is that these people who were lobbyists, they didn't just pack up and move back to Boise to run a candy store. They're still in Washington, D.C., trying to influence Congress.
Yeah, we found that 1,800 of the people who fell off are still working at the same firm. Now, their title may have changed, their job responsibilities may have changed, but there are also people who are kind of lobbyists without having to register as lobbyists, who are more advisors and maybe direct the lobbying activities of others. So it gets a little nuanced and complicated as to who exactly is a lobbyist and what constitutes lobbying activity.
And what is the advantage of saying, stepping up and saying, I am a lobbyist? If you don't have to say it, why would you?
There's no real advantage these days other than being, you know, completely forthright. But yeah, it's not something, you know, that is people in general and the Obama administration in particular don't have positive views about lobbyists.
Right. So if you don't have the word lobbyist on your business card, you just have, I'm just a guy who talks to congressmen about passing laws to reduce taxes on edible oils, then you're fine.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. It's not so much what's on your business card, but you do have to not have accepted a certain amount of money from a single client for going and making his or her case on the Hill. There are technical thresholds, but actually nobody has the word lobbyist on their business card. It's usually government relations or something like that.
Craig McDonald,
senior advisor.
Craig McDonald over at Texans for Public Justice. You're seeing the same trend in Austin?
You know, I don't think we are seeing the same trend. We have our problems with disclosure, but they're a little different from the problems at the federal level and at Congress. And, you know, this is Texas, a braggadocio state. I don't think we have anyone here shying away from the handle of lobbyist. In fact, the opposite seems to be true. We have several $2, $3, $4 million lobbyists. I think they're proud of it. And I think that the highest paid lobbyists use their ability to attract money and clients to go out and get other new clients. So it's kind of a badge of honor to be in the top tier of the lobbyists in Texas. And I think the lobby community here believes that gets you more clients. We do a survey every 2 years on the top lobbyists, and we get anecdotal feedback all the time from people who say, hooray, I made the top five of TPJ's list, because I think they think it gives them some imprimatur and a sense among their community that they're the top dogs pulling in millions of dollars.
So I hear you saying that there are a lot of people in Austin, they want to be labeled as a top go-getter, mover, and shaker as lobbyists, but we know that there's Michael Quinn Sullivan, who's a conservative activist, and he says he is definitely not a lobbyist, and he's going to court to prove it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So I don't think we have wholesale people running away from the lobbyists, but we do have the notorious case of Michael Quinn Sullivan, who works for Empower Texans. It's a unique case, but again, it's gotten a lot of notoriety.
Well, then it's also Bill Hammond, who he doesn't want to be labeled a lobbyist because it would mean that he couldn't serve on state advisory panels.
That's right. And we do have some triggers, official triggers, that trigger lobby registration.
Okay, we're going to get into all of this in just a second. There's a lot of unpacking to do on here and what it means for the citizens. You know, why lobbyists have got to be identified as lobbyists and who they are. Does that mean what they give and the parties that they throw and the gifts that they give? That's all got to be disclosed or not, or campaign contributions. That's, you know, transparency. Is that what this is all about? We're going to continue this conversation talking about lobbyists and unlobbying. The number to call if you got a question or a comment is 614-8980, 614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Lobbyists are hired guns in Washington, D.C. and Austin. They work on laws and to trying to pass laws that favor the industries that cut them checks. But there's got to be a level of transparency, or should there be a level of transparency? We don't know. That's the question. We're seeing more and more lobbyists in Washington, D.C. kind of falling off the radar, yet they're continuing their work. Do you have a concern about that? The number to call is 614-8980. Do you think that lobbyists should stand up and declare themselves lobbyists and make sure that everyone knows that they're doing their influence peddling on the up and up? Joining us to talk about that is Vivica Novak. She's the Editorial and Communications Director at the Center for Responsive Politics, talking about how this is working in Austin, Texas. Craig McDonald, Executive Director for Texans for Public Justice. So, Vivica, over in Washington, D.C., why so many lobbyists in Washington? It's amazing the numbers that you have there.
Yeah, well, this is kind of where policy gets made. And
isn't it like 25 for every member of Congress, something like that?
Well, there's more than 12,000 lobbyists, federally registered lobbyists, who were active last year. So there's 435 members of the House and 100 members of the Senate. So you can do the math, but there's a lot. There are way more lobbyists than there are members of Congress. And you know, they're hired by everyone from labor unions to corporations to trade groups, sometimes individuals, sometimes countries. So everybody wants to have their voice heard in Washington, because whether it's in Congress or at the federal agencies, EPA or the Bureau of Reclamation or whatever, this is where policy gets made.
And how does it work? I mean, do you, as a lobbyist, make recommendations for campaign contributions? Do you actually write the laws, or do you overlook the laws that are about to be passed and make recommendations? Are you a witness? How does that work?
Well, I think at the, you know, a sort of minimum thing that many lobbyists do is monitor legislation and just kind of keep up on what is happening in Congress regarding a particular subject and keeping their clients aware of that. But beyond that, I mean, many lobbyists draft legislation that, you know, that gets introduced on Capitol Hill. Others send along white papers and hold fundraisers, make recommendations on how a company or union political action committee should make its donations. So there's an awful lot to keep them busy, actually.
But being a lobbyist is not necessarily a dirty word, because they do give important feedback to the lawmakers about how laws could impact their industries, and that's an important function.
Exactly. And, you know, it's constitutional, really. Everybody has a right to be heard in Washington, and that's what lobbying is all about. And you're right, it's not, there's no real reason it should be a dirty word. I think that some of the less savory aspects of it come to the fore when you see, you know, some lobbyists taking members of Congress out golfing and schmoozing with them and throwing the fundraisers and giving them money. And it's all in a day's work for many lobbyists, but it doesn't convey the best impression, probably.
Sure. Jack Abramoff comes to mind as somebody who gave the word lobbying a bad name.
That would be one.
Okay, let's get some of our callers.
As he himself will admit.
Yeah, let's get some of our callers in on the conversation. Our number is 614-8980, and Sandra has called in. Sandra, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you. I am a volunteer advocate for science education, and I see the hallways filled with lobbyists, but not many citizens. When House Bill 5 was being considered, when it was being written, when it was being debated and panels were invited in, not once, even though the bill significantly impacted the four core disciplines, that's English, math, science, and social studies, not once were any of those teacher academic organizations invited to the table.
And so do you think that the bill, the final bill, suffered because of that?
Yes. You know, we've seen problems from it. In fact, they're having hearings currently on those, and none of the academic organizations have been invited to provide input for the impact of House Bill 5 on any of those four core disciplines.
So you're saying that the lobbyists and their influence is out of proportion for, you know, the public's needs. We're not able to keep up with that.
Absolutely, it's out of proportion.
Sandra, thank you so much for calling in, and call in anytime. We appreciate your input. So, Vivica Novak over at the Center for Responsive Politics, what's your reaction when you hear a citizen like Sandra saying they feel like their voice is not heard, it's being drowned out by these professional lobbyists?
Well, and that is probably the main complaint about the whole lobbying industry, is that, you know, your average citizen can't afford to hire a lobbyist, and so has a harder time getting heard, perhaps, in Washington, whereas it's the companies with the money or the larger groups that can afford to spend those dollars. So, that's why, you know, grassroots groups get started, but they get overwhelmed sometimes by faux grassroots groups that lobbyists often have a hand in organizing to try to make it seem like there's a big clamor out there on the side of whoever the lobbyist is representing. But it's definitely a valid point.
Let's get Pearl on the air. Pearl's called in. Welcome to The Source, Pearl. You're on the air.
Thank you. I just wanted to make a couple comments. I feel the idea of a lobbyist, you know, I agree it should not necessarily be a dirty word, but I feel perhaps the reason why it is a dirty word is because it's often affiliated with big business and their personal interests. I think that, you know, if they don't have a negative interest, then maybe they should expose who they're working for and exactly where that money and that, you know, those donations are going towards and what their personal agenda is. If you don't have a hidden agenda, then the people should have a right to know exactly what it is that you're trying to push and what legislation is going to be affecting you personally as a citizen.
All right, Pearl, you sound like you're making a magnificent case for transparency. That we should know, we should know who's paying for these lobbyists.
Absolutely. I feel like money has, in my personal opinion, no business in politics. But unfortunately, this is the time period that we live in where that is the case. And I feel, you know, if we cannot prevent money from being filtrated into politics, then we should at least know where that money is coming from and what their personal agenda is and how it's going to affect us as citizens.
Fantastic. Thank you for calling in, Pearl. Appreciate those comments. So Craig McDonald from Texans for Public Justice, I think we heard earlier an example from Sandra, and she called in talking about the testing, House Bill 5 and the testing. You know, and there were lobbyists in Austin that were very much involved in creating more testing, and these people were working for the testing corporation, and they are able to work with lawmakers and get these high stakes testing mania going in the state. And now we saw the response, citizen groups, grassroots groups saying this is out of control, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, often you will see a lobby here, when I say a lobby, a lobbying force mobilizing on behalf of privatization of government services. I think the testing issue is a great example. And they spend a lot of money to try to get into the Texas legislature to make sure that they win the spoils of any legislative activity. That's a very common practice. Most of the lobbying that goes on here is for hire. It's not from, Smitty from Public Citizen or Joe from the Sierra Club. It's lobbyists who will sell their services to the highest bidder, and it's often the highest bidder that prevails on hiring the best lobbyist and getting the best shot at having their legislative agenda, a special interest agenda, get through the legislature.
But as we're seeing impact of citizen groups trying to rein in all this out of control testing, we're seeing in Austin these groups that are led by Bill Hammond, who is with the Texas Association of Businesses, who is he's on a state advisory panel trying to keep testing in place. He will not declare himself as a lobbyist, but you're saying that he might be.
Yeah, I would think so. I haven't seen exactly what he's done. I know that Michael Quinn Sullivan, who we talked about earlier, claims he's not a lobbyist. And it's pretty clear that the materials and the letters and the communication he has had with members of the Texas legislature under the letter of the law makes him a lobbyist. So there's some people who are taking the stand that this is a free speech issue and they do not need to register, even though we believe registration's in the public interest. And there are others who say the registration requirements don't apply to them, and that's only because the registration requirements are a little too fuzzy.
So, Vivica Novak, what is the state of transparency in Washington, D.C.? Has it gotten so loose that people can just be lobbyists without actually having to say they're lobbyists?
Well, in some ways, there's pretty good transparency because there are quarterly lobbying disclosure forms that everyone has to file who is actively lobbying, and as well as the entities that hire them. But there are, these instances where we don't quite know what's going on, where people are kind of falling off the radar screen, these lobbyists, and, in some cases maybe legitimately so, but there's an awful lot of this sort of non-lobbying lobbying going on. And
well, what is that? What is non-lobbying lobbying?
it's what the kind of thing I was mentioning before, where you know, you may be directing other people on what they should be doing as lobbyists, or strategizing in some way, but not directly lobbying, or at least not sufficiently to have to register. You know, another thing that's interesting is that you don't have to register as a lobbyist if your contacts are with people at agencies that are below a certain pay grade. So some of the people who do the real work, for instance, in these agencies, you don't have to report lobbying contacts with them. So there are certainly some ways to get around the letter of the law. It's just, you know, where do you draw the line? Where does it get, you know, too onerous for people who are working for companies or unions or whatever that want to make their voices heard?
Sure, but we have former House Speaker Newt Gingrich, a Republican from Georgia, mm-hmm. and we have former Senate Majority Leader Tom Daschle, a Democrat from South Dakota, both of them practically being lobbyists, but they have never registered as lobbyists.
That's right.
So those are pretty glaring examples of how, you know, you don't have to be a lobbyist to lobby.
Right. That's absolutely true. And the question is, how broad do you make the definition before you, you know, I think legally it's a difficult issue, but we are, although we are not an advocacy organization, generally we do advocate for as much transparency as possible. So, you know, more is better than less as far as we're concerned.
Craig McDonald at the Texans for Public Justice, you've been talking about what's the level of transparency in this in Austin?
You know, I think at some level it's pretty good as far as registration goes. We have 1,600 lobbyists. They pull in about $328 million. We can see that. What we can't see, and where transparency is weak here, is exactly what bills and issues those lobbyists are working for. And at times we can't see who's paying them.
The dark money factor.
That's right. They're
all
working
right
for a law firm, but we don't know who's paying the law firm.
That's something that I think the people should know. All right. Thank you both, Craig McDonald and Vivica Novak. This is The Source on KSTX. We'll be back after this NPR news break.